Good evening and welcome back to the Inside Radio. Good evening and welcome back to the Inside Baseball Podcast. We've taken a couple of weekends off for the holidays, but we're back now to talk some more off-season baseball maneuvering, and there's always seems to be something going on. Almost every day there's been activity, and today being Sunday, the rumors that have cropped up involve majorly where Max Scherzer is going to end up, and now we're joined by my co-host Phil Colling, and I have to admit I was completely floored when I saw the team that seems to be leading the connection with Max Scherzer. I don't really see the logic in it, and that team is the Washington Nationals. What was your initial read when you thought when you found out that information about Mad Max?
Oh, no question, Steve. I mean, we this whole off season we've been speculating like crazy. You know, we got a Boris client here. You know, is this going to be kind of one of those where he waits all the way up until spring training to get the best deal? And he knew he was going to be one of the last ones to go, but he didn't think he was going to go to the Nationals. Now, from what we've read, it seems like the Nationals are the front runner. I mean, there's one mystery team. Again, that could just be a Boris thing, you know, to jack the price up. But if it is indeed the Nationals, which they're looking at 7 years, probably at least $180 million, if it's indeed the Nationals, do you even, like, I mean, can we just say that, I mean, already the Nationals could have the best starting rotation without Max Scherzer. I mean, is that safe to say? Is that pretty close?
You know, it's one of those things that I kind of joke around with when it hasn't really happened recently, but when there were teams that, you know, were the dynasty type of teams in the late 90s or whatever, I would always joke around that team, if they were loaded, should go out and acquire the best available player, even if they didn't need them, simply to keep them away from the opposition. And that's kind of what I feel like this move would be. I mean, I was joking around about it today, and as much as both of us have a lot of complimentary things to say about our boy Tanner Roark,
yeah,
he's going to Penn. And look at his numbers from last year. That's ridiculous. It's insane. I mean, I understand where they're at financially in regards to, you know, having a lot of guys coming off the books next year, and they figure, you know, let's make a super run at it or whatever. I guess I can understand that logic, but man, I just 7 years of this. I mean, I don't really see how this is really of great benefit to them. I mean, it doesn't even look like they're going to get much of a discount for doing it. So,
no,
I'm completely flummoxed by this.
I got to believe that there's another deal coming in the form of maybe a Jordan Zimmermann type thing. You know, he's going to be a free agent after this season. I got to believe that he's going to be on the move if Scherzer's on the way in. Now, that might not be it at all. That's just pure speculation, but it makes a little bit of sense to me. They could get, you know, a little bit more value maybe before he becomes – well, obviously they can get something for him before he becomes a free agent and hits the open market. But, you know, our boy Tanner, I mean, he had a 2.8 ERA last year. Only 10 pitchers in the entire Major League Baseball only 10 pitchers in all the MLB held opposing hitters to a lower OPS than him and Doug Fister. So that just that's just depth right there. I mean, when you got a guy like that shoring up, you know, your four or your five spot, I mean, you start at the top. You know, you could pick any one of your top three to be your number one. You got to say probably maybe Strasburg and Jordan Zimmermann could be 1-2. Fister could be a number one on any team. So Fister, Strasburg, Zimmermann, and then you got Gio Gonzalez, which, you know, he had just like a 3.5 or something ERA last season, which is still good, but, I mean, he could be a legitimate ace on a team too. So I just feel like if Zimmermann stays, if this happens, if Scherzer signs with the Nationals and Zimmermann stays, that is going to be one of the top 1 through 5, one of the best rotations, maybe ever. I mean, on paper. I mean, that's hard to argue.
Well, I mean, I look at the whole situation as it stands, and I've been kind of confused about what's going on with the Nationals pretty much all off season now, and then this crops up. But they seem to be desperate to rid themselves of Ian Desmond and replace him with inferior options than him. And you know, we keep hearing about maybe moving Zimmerman and maybe doing this and maybe moving Pfister. And I just really felt like of most of the teams in Major League Baseball, this was a team that I didn't think needed to really do that much this offseason. It just seemed
right.
like they're getting anxious
yeah.
and apprehensive about moves that I don't even think they really need to make. So
yeah.
it's been very confusing. And you mentioned it a little bit when you were talking about it before, you know, about the possible mystery team. Let's just presume that there actually is a mystery team and this is not a
okay.
smokescreen from Scott Boras. Who,
yeah.
in your opinion, should that mystery team be?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, in my opinion, it should be the Tigers. The Tigers should sign him. I know that's not going to happen. The Tigers are fine with, you know, moving forward with what they have. I think the Tigers are... I think they're going to miss him a lot. I don't think, you know, they haven't been able to take that next step even with him. I understand that, but you know, losing him this year in an upgraded AL Central, I mean, the AL Central could be one of the most improved, you know, divisions in all of baseball. So I think that the Tigers, you know, with Verlander, a big question mark, and Sanchez always a health risk. I think the Tigers needed to sign him. But I don't think they have the money to do so. So that's who I would say. But it's not going to happen. I know they're not the mystery team,
yeah.
though. What do you think?
I was kind of kicking this around today, and I'm going to say that I had two teams when it finally resolved itself, and I'm going to say officially that I think the mystery team should be the Boston Red Sox.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
I think they've put so much investment in their offensive additions and upgrades that for them to go into the season having invested that much with what I consider to be a fairly pedestrian pitching staff seems kind of defeating the purpose of spending all that money on offense. They don't really have a clear number one starter right now.
No,
I'm not
they
even
don't.
Sure they have a clear
right.
number two.
They don't.
And then, and it would revamp and do some interesting things to them. And, you know, it's not like they're hurting for money there. That's
no.
my other point on top of it, you know. So
right. and
if
not,
you're going to do that and you're going to be a serious player, you know.
Yeah. The Red Sox, to me, I mean, are a team that could. They're not going to lose a first-round pick because of it. They don't have, like you said, they have no depth. I mean, they have some depth. But they don't have a number one or number two even, and they're not winning a World Series without at least a number one. And I think that, you know, I think the reason I think it's not going to be them is because, you know, they weren't willing to pony up for Scherzer or for Lester. You know, Lester is a homegrown, or I don't know if he's homegrown per se, but I know that, you know, he's there a long time, and they weren't willing to really max out on Lester. I mean, they were aggressive, but not aggressive enough. So I think it'd be hard to see them doing that. But at the same time, who saw Sherrington, you know, buying Hanley Ramirez and Panda in, like, the same week? You know, like, who saw
yeah.
all these other things? So it's possible. Yeah, I'd say
yeah.
it's possible on that front. Man, I don't know. I'm still kind of shocked that the Nationals are, like, when I first saw that, when I was checking Twitter earlier today, and I saw that there could be a deal close, and I think John Heyman reported that it might be the Nationals. I'm like, what? It just doesn't make much sense to me. We've already kind of hit on it, but I don't know. I'd be shocked if there wasn't another deal coming, from the Nationals if this is actually, you know, them.
Well, switching gears from hypotheticals to deals that have actually happened,
right.
Evan Gattis shipped from Atlanta to Houston. I kind of expected Evan Gattis to get traded. I was surprised about two things about this deal, where Gattis ended up and the fact that he was sent alone as an individual
right.
piece in that deal, because I was under the presumption that when Evan Gattis got traded, that he would probably be traded along with one of the other
Upton
bloated salaries
on
the Braves to try to make that more attractive to some team. But he went to the Astros. The Astros gave up, in my opinion, two pretty good blue chip prospects to get him. What was your take on the Evan Gattis deal?
I really thought that the Braves were going to hang on to him. You know, earlier in the offseason, they were saying that the Braves' asking price for him was through the roof, which in some ways it should have been, because you're looking at a guy who, you know, is not necessarily a defensive highlight reel like Christian Bethencourt is going to be for Atlanta, but the dude can just stroke the ball. And he had, what, it was like 3 years of control still, I think, or – three or 4 years left, something like that. 4 years left before he's even arbitration eligible. So I think that he was – I don't know. I mean, they did get some prospects, but it strikes to me that Atlanta really is in fairly full-blown rebuild mode. Like, they're going to say that they're going to compete, and that's going to keep the fan base coming back this season. But in all honesty, they're gearing up for 2017 when that new field – you know, that new stadium's opening up, in my opinion.
Well, it seems like with me, the thing about Gattis, and I was kind of looking at some advanced statistics with him this week because I was trying to get a good feel for what it means if they take him out from behind the plate and give him a regular log of at-bats where, you know, he's not taking every other day off. And I think that's going to be a really good thing for him because if you look at it, PX, which is, you know, one of the advanced metrics to designate how much power a guy has, Evan Gattis ranked 16th in all of Major League Baseball last year.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we're talking about some elite guys that you, when you think power, and Evan Gattis is ahead of those guys. I mean,
right.
So this is a guy who can really, really crush the baseball, and given an opportunity to play every day, you know, shifting him around the field, stick him to left, put him at DH, put him at first base, put him wherever you're going to put him and get a regular log of at-bats with him. I mean, I think it's unreasonable to think he's a potential 30-35 home run guy. So, I think this is a good move for him in his situation.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it should be interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. From a fantasy perspective, absolutely. I just think, you know, he reminds me of, you know, what this exact situation reminds me of is Nelson Cruz. You're a big power guy, sucks in the outfield. You know, you can throw him at DH a little bit, but they've already got a full-time DH. Well, shouldn't say that, because Chris Carter did play. He probably played first base most of last season, I think. But, you know, he could play. He's going to mix and match probably at DH. And they're, I don't know if they're just saying this, but they said he's going to play some left field. It's a fairly short porch in left field, so that might work to his advantage, but we all know he's not even an average outfielder. And I don't know. He doesn't really get on base very much. He is a power hitter. So I like this more from a fantasy perspective than I do a real-life perspective. But I was a little shocked that the Astros went for him. You know, I mean, the Astros made some – you know, they beefed up their bullpen and that kind of – you know, the stuff this offseason. But I haven't really – I was shocked that they were able to swing this trade, and you know, and so I was a little shocked that it was just the Astros, but like you just said, I think from Gattis' perspective, this probably helps.
Yeah, it's kind of alarming if you really look at the financials on many of the teams in Major League Baseball, how little money the Houston Astros have committed to long-term deals. Mm-hmm. And I think this is the first step in a multi-tiered situation for them where they're like, okay, we expect our guys to be here, you know, our elite prospect guys to be here in 2 years. Let's start building, you know, in the other areas where we're deficient and getting some guys in here with some controllable years so that when those guys are ready, we've got some people around him. So,
yeah,
that's what I think they're going for. It's interesting to look at it. I was a little surprised that the Astros were the destination too, but to be honest with you, it seems like they've been in on a lot of stuff right now. And I mean, mm-hmm. I heard that the possible mystery team on Scherzer, for Christ's sake, could be them. I mean,
God.
You know? So yeah, that's interesting, they have a lot of financial flexibility. They've got a ton of money coming from, you know, from sources that they didn't have before. So you never know. I mean, it could get real interesting with them in regards to that. But
yeah,
another rumor that I heard that I saw floating around today, and I wanted to know if you thought it had any impact on either one of the two teams involved. It appears that Yovani Gallardo is fairly close to going to the Texas Rangers.
Yeah.
What's your initial snap judgment on that?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think the Brewers, they might benefit from this only because they've got Jimmy Nelson. They've got a guy who can – I mean, I think he might have been in the rotation anyway. Maybe they sign another veteran, you know, kind of a, you know, four or five guy in the offseason here before spring training, but – I think that for the Brewers, this makes some sense because if I'm not mistaken, I think Gallardo is supposed to be a free agent after this season. I could be wrong on that. Yeah, I think that's right. And I think Jimmy Nelson can slot right in. And I think Texas is looking to actually compete this year. You know, Texas has got some guys, you know, ready to bounce back. I mean, if Chu is healthy. You know, he wasn't healthy last year. You saw his numbers dip. Obviously, you know, Prince Fielder signed that massive contract and traded to the Rangers and, you know, had the neck surgery last year, was basically out the entire year. So if he comes back and Chu comes back and Darvish's arm healthy, and you know, I actually think the Rangers are looking to compete this season. So I think it makes sense for them. And I think Milwaukee was dealing from a position of, you know, free up some cap space, get rid of a guy who, you know, who's been there a while, but to get rid of a guy who's obviously in his last season. And, we don't know the details or, you know, who they're getting back. Have you seen anything about who they might be getting back?
I've seen it looks like a prospect swap. I've seen Luis Sardinas connected to them, their young shortstop prospect. I really haven't seen any specific names other than his and I think that was sheer speculation more than anything else. So,
right.
Okay. I mean, I don't think it's going to be a huge haul for the Milwaukee Brewers in any way, shape, or form, but I do think that, you know, if the Rangers want to try to turn this thing around, they've got to get at least one or two guys in their rotation that are actually reliable and can throw some innings. Because that's been a huge problem for them over the last couple of years. And as far as that goes, Yovani Gallardo has been one of the more consistent innings eaters in baseball over the last couple of seasons.
Right, yeah. Yeah, I think so, too. And, yeah, I think the Rangers, you know, they've got, Darvish and Holland, if he's fully healthy. And, you know, they need – and Colby Lewis. But, you know, this Gallardo trade would kind of eliminate, you know, kind of bump one of those guys, you know, like a Nick Tepes or Nick Martinez kind of out, which automatically just makes you better. You know, you got a veteran starter in there. So I think this kind of makes sense for both teams. You know what I mean? So we'll see who they get back. But I can't imagine, in his last season, basically as a one-year rental, I can't see the Brewers getting a haul back. But they might get, you know, a guy with some upside, and I don't know, it would be interesting to see when that finally goes through, but it does look like it's going to go through at some point tonight or tomorrow.
Before we transition on to the next topic, I'd just like to invite anybody interested in discussing some of these topics with us to give us a call if you'd like. Area code 347-850-8177 is our call-in number tonight, so feel free to give us a ring if you'd like. And next up, we're going to go back to our good buddy Billy Bean, who seems to always be doing something. And a couple of moves since our last broadcast, the first of which, to be honest with you, similar to my reaction to Max Scherzer, it just floored me.
Yeah.
The A's acquired Ben Zobrist. I didn't really know how to react to it. I mean, we both have, you know, strange ties to Zobrist as well, so...
Right.
You know, so we invest a little bit more interest in what's going on with Ben than a lot of people might. If you would have asked me to make a list of the teams where Zobrist might end up when he was being basically bandied about the league and trade proposals, I wouldn't have
looked
at the A's anywhere near the top of that list. And what are your thoughts on the Zobrist deal?
Yeah, I was equally shocked. Now, you know, I have a personal connection with Ben, obviously. I don't keep in contact with him every day or anything like that, but, you know, he's someone I follow quite carefully, I guess, and I knew that there was a lot of rumors going on with him. I actually thought the Giants were going to get him. You know, there was a lot of talk about the Giants making a trade for him, and obviously, you know, Tampa Bay liked the package they got from Oakland kind of there in the final hour. I think that, you know, obviously Oakland is – I think Oakland has a plan. You know, I'm still not certain that they're going to compete this year, that they're going to make the playoffs. But I do think Billy Beane has a plan. You know, he always does, and, you know, not everyone kind of sees it's very unconventional. But what I think Zobrist is for the A's is a perfect fit for what they are looking to do. I mean, their roster flexibility is could be one of the tops in the league. You got guys in the lineup who can play, I mean, multiple positions. You got guys who can, you know, hit for power, hit, you know, run a little bit. So I think that Zobrist, you know, him being a second baseman, a great defensive second baseman and a very good outfielder, can play some shortstop. You know, they just dealt Yunel Escobar, who also came over in that deal. I was reading an article, Ben was saying that he was kind of excited Yunel came because, you know, they had a double play partner, and then, you know, 2 days later, Yunel gets shipped out for Tyler Clippard, which I actually kind of like that deal for Oakland, by the way. Escobar has terrible defensive metrics from last season, and, you know, they have Simeon and Zobrist and probably some other options. And Clippard is one of the best setup men in the league, but that's kind of a separate thing. But I just think that, you know, I did think it made some sense for Oakland. And who was it again that went back to the Rays? It was Jaso and I don't have
Daniel,
to hold up.
Daniel Robertson is
yeah,
an infield
Robertson,
prospect.
Yeah.
Is an infield prospect that a lot of people like a lot. So,
yeah, that was
you know, I think it – it leaves some interesting voids with Tampa Bay that I don't really know how they're going to fill. I mean, I don't think I'm very happy if I'm Evan Longoria right now because I'm
yeah.
not going to get a whole heck of a lot of lineup protection with what the Rays currently have on their roster. I mean, that's just
right.
straight honesty.
Yeah.
And not that it was all on Ben Zobrist or anything to provide that, but with the litany and series of moves that they've made this year, they've left a lot of question marks in that everyday lineup. So,
yeah.
you know, I wonder about that moving forward. It's just a very interesting sequence of events from Oakland. And you know my stance on Billy Beane in general is that I am very loath to criticize, like a lot of people are, him because, like I said, he always seems to end up with assets that people want. So he must have some
right.
idea what he's doing. Granted, it hasn't netted a lot of postseason success, but he's out there doing stuff, and he's trying to make things happen. And granted, it has not worked in winning the ultimate goal, but he's been a lot more successful than a lot of other guys that like to stand on their hands
mm-hmm.
and talk about moves that they couldn't bear to make or anything else. He's trying to make stuff happen. He's getting more commodities. If there's nothing to say. If
right.
Oakland tanks, Ben Zobrist is a commodity in July that he can move
right.
and get something
exactly.
else. I mean, it's one of those things where, you know, do I think that he could have done the same with the people that he got, that he sent away in July? No, I don't. So, I mean, it's interesting what he did. And I too, really like the Tyler Clippard acquisition from the Nationals because my
yeah.
general reaction to Yunel Escobar is that if you have to put him in your lineup, it's more a move out of desperation than actually wanting to do it. Yeah, I guess we'll play Escobar. You know, it's
yeah.
just one of those things where, I mean, he's a below average alternative at whatever position you end up playing him at, in my opinion. So nothing
yeah.
to get excited about. And I've really liked the work that Clippard has done for the Nationals out of their bullpen for several
oh, yeah.
seasons now.
Yeah.
And I think it was with him put back basically in the same role, setting up a pretty decent closer in Sean Doolittle. I think he'll probably
yeah.
make a seamless transition out there. So it's
yeah.
an interesting thing to look at. So,
well, yeah, he does this. You know, he does this.
You know,
he basically just kind of puts these puzzles together that no one knows, and then eventually it kind of fits, and you just kind of scratch your head at the beginning, but then you learn later he had something in the works. But we'll see.
Yeah, it's one of those things where you just kind of have to look at the A's and kind of respect what they've been able to do and figure that, you know, with the number of moves that they make, that eventually, you know, they're probably going to hit on some, they're probably going to miss on some, but they swing big in a lot of ways. As our friend Jimmy Street likes to say, they're trying to Juan Uribe it. So that's one of those things. When I look at it, I'm interested in it, but you know, it's still, you know, very, very questionable, you know, moving forward what it's going to be. But there's a couple of things that I wanted to ask you about, because I think you might know a little bit more about a couple of these players that have been sparking the international market than I do. I mean, I'm aware of them, but Yoan Moncada, what can you tell me about him and what you know about him and what your expectations are? Should he sign somewhere here in the near future with a team that has an obvious vacancy where he plays?
You know, I do know a lot about him, actually. He's a Cuban. He's 19 years old. He's a switch hitter. He is, as a lot of international scouts and writers have been talking about, one of the top names to come from Cuba in years. Now, he is more of a prospect than an MLB-ready kind of guy. You know, he's not a Jose Abreu. When Abreu signed with the White Sox, he's 26 years old. He, you know, is not going to be a guy who's going to sign with the team and make an immediate impact. Another thing that's unique about him is he is 19. So there's a lot of rules in there. I'm not even quite certain about you know, when he can sign, all these things. But right now, he's not even cleared by OFAC to really sign with anyone. He has been working out. He just worked out with the Giants, you know, like a private workout. And so he has been able to do that. He's been able to display his skills, obviously, on showcases and stuff for teams. And from the reactions I've been reading, teams are very – interested, and they are willing to go over their international bonus pool money, you know, their allotments by a lot, because this is the kind of impact prospect that, you know, people dream of. You know, like I said, a switch hitter. He's an infielder. He runs very, very quickly. It's actually kind of interesting. We all know Rusny Castillo now, and or he should be well known, at least after, you know, first couple of months of this season, most likely. But we know the kind of speed he has, and it's kind of funny that a year and a half ago at the Cienfuegos, or the Serie Nacional, the Cuban top league, they had an all-star game, and Moncada, he raced Castillo and beat him in a 60-yard dash. And so that kind of shows what kind of speed he has, and he's a big guy. He's about 6'1", kind of built like a Puig, kind of. But he's still so young, and I do think that he's in a unique position because he's so young. You know, people are projecting him to be just this absolute stud someday. And it sounds like, from what I've read also, that the Red Sox and Yankees are the most interested. And so another thing that's also interesting about him, I know I'm talking a lot about him, but I have read a lot about him. Another thing that's interesting is he came to the United States from Cuba legally. You know, we hear all these stories, and if you haven't out there heard about the Puig story, if you haven't read that on ESPN the magazine, or even Abreu's story, or, you know, Chapman's story of how they got to the United States, especially the Puig story, it is amazing. Some of these stories are dangerous and incredible, and they're a really good read if you ever have some free time. But he's a little bit different. He came legally. The Cuban government let him leave. And so I thought that was kind of interesting. So he's a little bit in a different boat, no pun intended, compared to some of these other guys. But he's a top prospect. He will be top 10 prospect in any organization that signs him. And we'll have to wait to see until he's cleared to sign to see who gets that chance.
It's just kind of interesting to me, because obviously I haven't done an extensive study on him, but I mean, I've seen some poor quality videos, some things like that. He looks like an interesting guy. It just seems like right now, I mean, anymore, you have to take you have to take everything and kind of look at these international players with a fine-tooth comb. So it's always very interesting for me to consider, you know, what's going to end up happening in all these situations, because there's so many guys out there right now that, I mean, that everybody wants to anoint the next such and such. And it's always interesting to me to try to figure out who those guys are going to be. But there are still some names on the free agent market that I think can make a difference for teams, and maybe not a huge way, like, you know, like the pitchers that we've talked about, but a few guys that I was thinking about today, a guy like Colby Rasmus. He's a guy out there that's been fairly successful in the past. Do you feel like there's a good fit in baseball right now, a team that needs a Colby Rasmus?
I can tell you is rumors. You know, things that I've read. I know the Orioles have kicked the can on him and kicked the tire on him, and I know the Cubs have reportedly been a little bit interested, and maybe the Marlins a little bit. I don't know. I don't know whether to like him or not, just as a player and even as a fantasy player. I can't tell. I mean, I know he's got a ton of athleticism. You know, he's a pretty good outfielder, and I know the outfielding free agent crop is pretty low right now. And I don't know. I really don't know what team. You know, there are a lot of teams that could use some outfield help. You know, I mean, even the Marlins are talking about a 2-year deal with Ichiro possibly. You know, and Ichiro is 156 hits away from 3,000 in the United States, and he could get that chance with them. But I don't know where he's going to end up. And in some ways, like, I don't know how much of an impact he's going to be one way or the other. You know, he obviously has power, but he never hits for average. So I don't know. It really depends on what kind of team. As spring training starts to creep up on us, what kind of team is going to look for maybe a 1-year deal with him or something like that. But I couldn't tell you right now which team's going to sign him.
I kind of look at Rasmus and I think about the team that was connected to him last week with the Baltimore Orioles. And apparently everything was positive in their meetings and everything else. And my general reaction to that was, well, then what are you waiting for? Because if you look at that team's outfield, there's some below average to poor alternatives for them right now in their outfield. So I certainly think they could use a guy like him. They need another bat. I don't think they've adequately replaced what they've lost. So I think that might be a good fit for them. Another group that I was looking at today, just in terms of, I mean, obviously there are teams that have some unsettled bullpens out there. There are some guys that were pretty successful last year, Francisco Rodriguez, to a lesser extent, Casey Jansen, and maybe Rafael Soriano still has some gas in the tank as far as maybe closing out out some games for a lower-run team. Do you feel like there are any teams right now that really could use maybe one of those guys to kind of shore up an unstable bullpen?
I think the Blue Jays need to do that. I mean, obviously they're losing Jansen here, and he's, you know, it's always likely, I find, that guys who aren't signing with anyone early in the off season tend to sometimes just kind of revert back to their original club. Maybe they weren't getting the money or the years that they wanted elsewhere. I think that the Blue Jays need a closer. I don't know who that's going to be. You just said three good ones who are out there. I mean, you know, they've all got some mileage on them. But I think the Blue Jays could use one. I think, in all honesty, if I'm a Tiger fan, I could say the Tigers could use one. Obviously, you've got money already kind of allotted to Joe Nathan, and Joaquin Soria has been there and has closed before. But, you know, I think the Tigers had one of the worst bullpens, at least in the ninth inning last season, of anyone. I mean, they've got Albuquerque and you know, a few other guys, but they could use a closer.
As a White Sox fan, I hope the Tigers just keep on doing what they're doing. I think they got it locked down. Their plan is great.
Yeah,
And if you're not there, you're not picking up on the sarcasm, I apologize.
No, yeah, I definitely am. I think the Tigers have done a lot to hurt themselves, and I think that they, I don't know, losing Scherzer and not really. I haven't seen them really make any moves this off season. I mean, have they done anything this off season?
I mean, they've done a little bit. I mean, obviously the big thing that they did was bring back Victor Martinez. That was where they allotted a lot of their money for their off-season shopping, if you will. And then the Cespedes trade, obviously, you know, it bolstered their situation a little bit. But, you know, I think that overall I'm not, as like I just mentioned, as a White Sox fan, I'm not nearly as scared of this team as I once was. I'll put it that way. So, I mean, with them seemingly committed to not bringing back Max Scherzer, a declining Justin Verlander, I'll take my chances against David Price and Anibal Sanchez at the top of my rotation against theirs. So, you know, let's go. So that's the interesting thing for them. So, but, you know, I look around the league and I think there are a lot of just ridiculously unstable bullpens out there. And I mean, I can't believe the Milwaukee Brewers are going to go into the season with Jonathan Broxton as their scheduled closer. I mean, I find that to be ridiculous. I mean, Addison Reed, bad in Arizona. LaTroy Hawkins is 150 years old. I mean, how can you seriously be closing with that guy? I mean, I don't get it. Like I said, there's just a lot of teams out there that just seems like with a minor move here and an available guy that can you know, mm-hmm. be the difference between you blowing a bunch of games in late innings. You know, I know how frustrating that can be, obviously, for everybody involved. You get to the ninth inning of a game, you want a lockdown guy, you want a guy who can come and get some outs for you and knows how to get the job done, and just blowing games all over the place. It's just... There's more teams than usual that are going in with instable. I mean, I look at your Cubs. I mean, really comfortable with Hector Rondon in the ninth inning?
No.
You know,
not for a team that was looking to compete, no.
You know, so it's like that just feels like there's a lot of guys out there that a lot of teams seem to be taking the philosophy right now of building that bullpen to where they don't only have the ninth covered, but they're thinking about the seventh and eighth. And I think it's a really inventive way to look at it, and obviously the Royals had a lot of success with that. But, you know, if you don't have the ninth locked down, you can't even start thinking about the eighth and the seventh. You got to worry about the ninth.
Well, that's why I think the Blue Jays, that's why I said them first, because I'm looking at their projected closers, Brett Cecil. Like, that's
– yeah.
I mean, he had a pretty good year last year, I mean, as a reliever, but you can't go into your season with Brett Cecil with a 1.4 whip, you know, as your closer. You can't go into your season with, you know, Bobby Parnell as your closer if you're the Mets. You can't do that. I mean, you can't go, if you want to compete, you can't go into the season with Jonathan Broxton. You can't go into the season with Hector Rondon. You can't go into the season with LaTroy Hawkins, Joe Nathan. I mean, those are – and then there's other guys who I think are good. And that there's a whole other discussion out there about whether, you know, the closer role is really as tough, I guess you could say, as maybe like an eighth inning position. You know, like there's guys like Luke Gregerson, who's technically probably the closer right now for the Astros, but he's never been a closer before. So is that something that you address? I mean, especially now that the Astros are, you know, making some purchases. I mean, if they really want to compete, you can't underscore how badly a team needs to have a stable bullpen. And your White Sox last year are a prime example of that. You know, there was just a carousel on the closer wheel last year, as I remember. So, you know, as well as anyone.
Yeah, it's a situation that once it starts to bleed, it's almost impossible to stop the bleeding without making some sort of acquisition to improve it. Because if you don't have that situation settled at the end of spring training, it usually doesn't fix itself. You very rarely get a guy who has absolutely no experience at the job that's just going to grab a hold of it and run with it. So,
yeah.
I mean, it's a tricky situation, but when I look at who's available and I look at all the teams out there that kind of have a need that they could really use addressing, you know, it's I mean, and a lot, and the list includes some teams that have made some serious acquisitions during this season, but then to just kind of leave that to chance doesn't really seem like the best of ideas to me. So it's just kind of an interesting way to look at it. So, but one more minor move that happened that I'm always intrigued by what this team does, because I know they have a great pitching staff, the San Francisco Giants with I thought that was a quiet move, but it was a move that I think fits what they do. I'm not a huge fan of that particular player, but he seems like the kind of guy that would fit really well into kind of that piecemeal, lock together the best lineup on a day-to-day basis. And what did you think about the Giants making that move?
It was, like you said, it was under the table. You know, I liked it for the Giants. I think Aoki is a good player. He kind of reminds me, though, you know, he's kind of like a pesky kind of leadoff hitter. And it kind of reminds me, I mean, of Angel Pagan already. You know, I feel like they kind of already got someone like that. I would have liked to have seen them get some more power in their lineup, especially after losing Sandoval. I would have liked to see them get someone who, you know, can really knock it out of the park as needed. But you've got Gregor Blanco out there. You've got Pagan. I mean, these are guys who have no power. So, I mean, he hit one home run last year. I mean, we know what kind of player he is. He's going to get on base. But if you don't have any boppers besides Posey in your lineup to knock him in, then I just don't. I mean, I project him as their number two hitter probably, now that Scudero's basically done. And I was a little surprised that they didn't replace Morse's power with, and Sandoval's power, another power bat. You know, I felt like he's a good player. He's a solid player. I totally, on that side of it, I totally agree. That's a great sign. But just from what I thought that the Giants would need moving forward in their lineup, I thought they needed another power bat.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of, when I was looking at what they were doing, and after they lost Sandoval, I was like, hey, what are they going to do here? I mean, all bets aside, once all the power bats went off the board, and I'm, as far as I'm concerned, there's not really a legitimate power bat available for them at this point. I mean, they kind of let everyone go, but it's kind of hard to argue with the way that they've done things. Essentially, what they're saying is,
right.
Pablo Sandoval wasn't really all that great in the regular season for them last year. They got by with an outfield that had Travis Ishikawa, a guy that they just can't seem to get off of their roster, not really producing all that well, who just kind of showed up in the postseason for him and got it done. The pitching is so good that I think they feel like they can scrape out 3 or 4 runs a night, and usually that's going to be enough for them. And it's hard to argue with their success ratio. So, I mean, looking at them, I mean, they'll have crazy Hunter Pence running into the walls and hopefully keep Buster Posey healthy enough to play enough games. And then they'll figure out the rest of it by scratching out 2 runs, and Madison Bumgarner will throw 8 scoreless innings and they'll win, you know, 2-1. So, I mean, wins are wins. I mean, sometimes they're not very pretty in San Francisco, but World Series trophies are pretty awesome too. So you can't push them around too much, but well, I think that that about wraps up what we were gonna touch on tonight. Thinking maybe next week we could start talking about some individual intriguing players to us and the various reasons why they are and go from there. But we'll look forward to catching up with you next week on Inside Baseball Podcast, and thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next week.
All right, good night.